The arsenal of Iranian ballistic missiles modeled after Shahab is very large, but to attack Iran's arch foe, namely Israel, Iran had to develop tactical missiles as well. These tactical missiles use solid fuel and are based on defense missile structures, differing from the Scud missile production style. Iran has produced several high-efficiency models of these missiles. The production of tactical missiles in Iran dates back to the days when defense missiles were used in combination with rockets. In the 1970s, Iran initiated a plan to design artillery rockets, leading to the production of Zelzal 1 to 3. These developments marked a significant scientific leap for the country. After the Iran-Iraq War in the 1990s, Zelzal and Tun-69 were employed by the IRGC and the Iranian Army, eventually giving rise to the Fateh family through reverse engineering and integration of these two missiles. The Fateh missile is very similar to the Russian SAM 122, indicating that Iran explored all available capabilities to develop it. The Zelzal 2 missile was a heavy unguided artillery rocket sharing similar design principles with the Nazaat missile. The Nazaat missile, which was actually an Iranian-made rocket with a range of about 100 kilometers, set the stage for further advancements. By increasing the accuracy and range of these rockets, Iran developed the Fajr 5 missiles, which are considered the most accurate in Iran's special artillery. The Fajr 5C, in particular, has satellite navigation capability. These are the moments when the Fajr 5 missile is launched by the Iranian armed forces. With modifications to its tactical solid-fuel missiles, Iran developed the Fateh 360 missile. This missile can be launched from platforms with three or six launchers, though it is used less frequently than single-missile launchers. The warhead of these missiles weighs about 150 kilograms, making them suitable for use as artillery rockets, and they've been adapted for the Iranian ground forces. Zelzal and Fajr paved the way for the Fateh series. In 2002, Iran tested the first significant missile of this type, named the Fateh 110. China uses similar ballistic missiles to target moving maritime targets. Iran quickly developed and tested the maritime version of this missile, called the Persian Gulf. The main model has a range of about 300 kilometers, with a total weight of 3,450 kilograms, including a 500 kilogram warhead. This 8.86 meter long missile has four production generations. The fourth generation has a range exceeding 400 kilometers, covering the entire Persian Gulf and Sea of Oman. Iran has used this missile to target two overseas headquarters of its enemies in Erbil and the Iraqi Kurdistan region. These targets linked to the Mossad and its ally, the Kurdistan Communist Party, were hit with pinpoint accuracy, yielding satisfactory results for Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran soon began developing solid fuel and tactical transfer missiles, leading to the creation of the Zulfiqar missile. The Zulfiqar is short-range, solid-fueled, tactical, point-to-point ballistic missile. It is resistant to jamming and electronic warfare, meaning it does not deviate from its course if electronic signals are used. Notable features of the missile include its mobile launch platform, radar evasion, pinpoint accuracy, and lightness, It can destroy targets up to 700 kilometers away when launched in an inclined mode. The missile is equipped with a 500-kilogram warhead. The unique capability of the Zulfiqar missile compared to other short to medium range systems is its detachable warhead. This feature allows the Zulfiqar to function similarly to medium range and long range ballistic missiles. It reduces the negative effects of connecting the missile body to the warhead, making it very difficult for enemy systems to track and hit the Zulfiqar warhead in the final phase of its attack. Iran targeted a Daesh terrorist base in the Deir ez-Zor region of Syria with a Zulfiqar missile. Notably, the Daesh headquarters was very close to U.S. military base, but the missiles accurately struck the Daesh headquarters. Iran named the operation Laylatul Qadr, meaning the night when God decides the fate of a person. A year later, Iran used the same missile to target Daesh in Iraq. The Zulfiqar missile is proven accurate in all strikes. Therefore, the Zulfiqar is likely one of the missiles Iran is considering for an attack on Israel. However, with a range of only 700 kilometers, the missile's range will need to be enhanced. In the same year, Iran unveiled the Dezful missile. Named after a city heavily hit by rockets during the Iraq-Iran war, the Dezful missile is a smart ground-to-ground ballistic missile. It closely resembles the Zulfiqar missile in terms of dimension and size. The Dezful missile has a range of 1,000 kilometers, and its warhead has twice the destructive power of the Zulfiqar missile. The speed of at least 8 times the speed of sound, it almost certainly hits its target. The Dezful, with its 1,000-kilometer range, is a suitable option for attacking Israel, provided it can bypass the defense shield of Israel's allies who have installed THAAD radar systems around Iran. THAAD has a range of 1,000 kilometers and is considered the best radar shield in the world. To overcome this, Iran began developing anti-radar missiles. Iran developed the Hormuz missile from the Fateh and Persian Gulf families. This missile detects radar signals from defense systems and can precisely destroy a 20-meter container from a distance of 300 kilometers. In the first phase of the attack, the missile Seeker locks on to the radar targets and destroys them. Iran aims to counter defense systems with this missile. Air-to-surface missiles such as American AGM-88 and the Russian KH-31 are among the most renowned air-launched anti-radar missiles on the planet. In the surface-to-surface category, several other anti-ship missiles with anti-radar capabilities can also be mentioned. For example, the French Exocet missile or the Russian P-700 anti-ship missile have radar homing capabilities, tracking the radar waves produced by a vessel's radar to attack the source. Before the unveiling of the Hormuz, there was no anti-radar ballistic missile publicly revealed by any armed forces in the world. This is likely due to global focus on air-launched and guided missiles. Iran, however, has developed significant expertise in building surface-to-surface ballistic missiles and has become a major power in this field. Another notable feature of the Hormuz 1 missile system is its high mobility, as it can be placed on a high mobility launcher, fire, and then relocate quickly. On July 25, 2020, Iran accurately hit a simulator of NATO's most important radar, THAAD, with this missile. But penetrating Israel's defense systems requires an extremely important technology called carbon fiber technology. Iran needed composite engines and carbon bodies despite facing harsh sanctions. As a result of these efforts, the RAD 500 missile and the Zuhair and Salman engines were unveiled. One of the key points about the RAD 500 missile is advanced technology and materials used in its construction. The missile is equipped with a composite system known as a Zaheer composite propulsion system, used in both the body and propulsion system. This means both parts are entirely made of composite materials using carbon fiber technology, significantly reducing the missile's weight compared to other types in the Fatah 110 family. American F-22 Raptor aircraft, one of the most advanced fighters in the world, uses 350 pieces of carbon fiber. The F-35, another fifth-generation stealth fighter made by the U.S., also uses this material. About a third of the advanced fighter is made of carbon fiber. American destroyers of the Zumwalt class, as the future destroyers of the U.S. Navy, also use a large amount of these materials in their body. Therefore, it could be estimated that the RAV missile can withstand movement of up to 10 Mach in the re-entry phase and the final dive on the target, which proves Iran's acquisition of hypersonic missiles. Iran has a missile named Hash Qasem. This mid-range missile, part of the new generation of the Fatah family, travels at 12 times the speed of sound and hits the target at 6 times the speed of sound. The Hash Qasem missile, with a range of 1,400 kilometers, is the first Iranian solid-fuel tactical ballistic missile capable of easily reaching Israeli-occupied territories. Previously, the Dezful missile, with a range of 1,000 kilometers, could only target limited points in occupied territories if fired from certain border areas. Cross-border firing carries its own risks, but the Hash Qasem missile, with its extended range of 1,400 kilometers, can target Israeli-occupied territories from deeper within Iran. Firing from a secure depth within Iranian territory significantly reduces the chances of detecting the missile before launch and provides less time for Israel's missile defense systems to react. Additionally, the detachable warhead of the Hash Qasem missile minimizes radar reflection. Its high speed upon re-entry of the Earth's atmosphere makes it challenging for enemy missile systems to intercept, greatly increasing the success rate of the missile attack. The most important distinguishing feature of the Hash Qasem missile is its new and largely unique design among ballistic missiles. This missile uses a fixed stabilizer block at the end of its body, ensuring accuracy in hitting the target. The experience with the Hash Qasem missile led the IRGC Aerospace Force to develop the Fatah. The Fatah has a range of 1,400 kilometers and travels at 14 times the speed of sound, classifying it as a hypersonic missile. Hypersonic missiles can travel 5 times faster than the speed of sound. Experts highlight that the Fatah missile's moving nozzle allows it to maneuver in an irregular path, making it difficult to intercept. The missile runs on solid fuel, and its explosive conical warhead, maneuverability, and high speed are its key features. This missile can bypass American and Israeli anti-ballistic missile systems, including the Iron Dome. Iran also unveiled the Fatah 2 missile, which is an HGV type, meaning it is hypersonic. Conventional ballistic missiles follow a predictable trajectory and are vulnerable to interception by the latest anti-ballistic missile systems. However, the maneuverability of hypersonic glide vehicles, HGV, in flight makes their trajectory unpredictable, allowing them to effectively evade air defenses. The development of the HGVs is considered an arms race, and Iran has worked to keep up with its global rivals in this field. Russia, China, North Korea, and the United States had equipped their armed forces with hypersonic missiles before the Islamic Republic of Iran. Among missiles, there are non-hypersonic types that can maneuver, but the main feature of hypersonic missiles is their high speed combined with maneuverability, which enables accurate and precise targeting. A hypersonic missile without the ability to maneuver can be intercepted and destroyed by anti-missile defense systems due to the predictability of its trajectory. Hence, high speed and unpredictable trajectory are the two essential components of hypersonic missiles. These missiles can be launched from the ground, from sea, by submarines, and from the air by bombers and fighter bombers. The Fatah-1 missile is considered a hypersonic ballistic missile, whereas the Fatah-2 missile is a hypersonic cruise missile. Hypersonic cruise missiles are deemed more dangerous because they fly at a lower altitude than ballistic missiles, making them harder to detect. Another significant aspect of the Fatah-2 missile is that it completes the launch chain of hypersonic missiles within Iran. Cruise missiles are essentially unmanned drones with controllability designed exclusively for destructive missions. Powered by turbofan motors, they can travel between 800 and 3,000 kilometers depending on their configuration and weight. A key feature of these missiles is their exceptional accuracy. Additionally, they can fly very low above the ground to avoid detection by most radar systems. Iran needed such missiles to bypass the NATO system and thus decided to build cruise missiles. One of these missiles was the Sumar, one of the best missile systems made in Iran, available in two models. It is an evolved version of the Meshkat missile and inspired by the Russian Kh-55 missile. The Sumar is a ground-launch missile that uses a solid fuel booster to carry a 410-kilogram warhead. The Sumar was quickly upgraded, leading to the development of the Hovezeh. Now, the Hovezeh has a flight range of over 1,350 kilometers and has recorded a maximum range of 1,200 kilometers in operational mode. The third generation of the Sumar is called the Pavel. The Pavel is unique with the capability to attack in groups with one system and several missiles. In this method, one missile acts as a leader, directing other missiles towards enemy targets. Additionally, the missile uses retractable wings to take different routes to reach the final target. Uzi Rubin, the father of rocket science in the Israeli regime, commented on the Sumar family.
Obviously, you can see here a picture of which we found one very short clip of a solid propellant test in Iran. They are so proud, and the reason sometimes I think the security forgets to screen things out. So this is a very short clip of about 2 seconds in one of the movies about their armament industry. 30 months later, 2.5, not bad at all for the time, the first Ashura took off. We don't have a picture of that because in the release, this is a construction by the American Missile Defense Agency, slide of General Obering. I took this part of it, he gave me the slide. So 30 months from end of development of the solid propellant motors till first flight, not bad. But what's more impressive, that 12 months later, this was failed. 12 months later, they fired the second one. It failed also. They recovered, and in 6 months only, they fired a successful one. What does it mean? It means they know what they are doing. They have good program management. They have good system engineering, they have the engineering talent, and they have all the infrastructure they needed.
The Iranian Pavel missile attacks from behind the targets. Normally, the enemy expects Iranian missiles to follow a trajectory between the country's borders and the target area, so it strengthens its defense in that direction. However, with increased range, the missile can pass around the target from a distance, then turn and attack from the opposite side, away from the country's borders. Iran intends to punish Israel with its collection of missiles, signaling that it has exhausted its strategic patience. The attack must be carried out in such a way that the Israeli regime will never again attempt to assassinate Iranian commanders and political and military figures. The decision, communicated to the armed forces to target the occupied territories, is made from within Iranian territory. Such a strategy is very risky. All NATO interceptors are ready. Therefore, if Iran's attack is successful, Israel's six-decade strategy will be destroyed. If Iran fails, Israel will be permanently established in West Asia. The game that Iran will start will definitely lead to the destruction of one side. The duel is about to begin. Those who named Al-Quds as Jerusalem should prepare themselves for a one-week nightmare. The Jerusalem nightmare is about to come true.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Please stay tuned.
یه مطلب دیگر این که حالا آقا من حالش ندارم نه حالش دارم بخونم نه حالش دارم شما بخونی گوش بدم.
Some people might say I can't recite the Quran and I don't like to listen to someone else reciting it. For such people it is recommended to have a Quran in their houses. The mere presence of the Quran in someone's house might keep the devils away from you. So the mere presence of the Quran is itself useful and has surely positive effects. We can also ask for divine healings through the verses of the Holy Quran.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
کدام از این آیات یک آثاری داره، هر آیه یه اثری داره.
As you might know, every verse of the Holy Quran has its own effect. This means that every verse has its own fragrance, as any fruit has its own specific fragrance and color. Through the verses of the Quran, we can reach divine healing if we have faith in what we read and we believe in its positive effects. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Till another episode and another short speech of a great alim or scholar, fi amanillah, God bless you all.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump's election campaign threat to impose 10% levies on U.S. trading partners could hurt Britain's economy. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Outside the US Embassy in London, a steady line of visitors arrived for visa appointments. On the windswept south bank of the River Thames, the fortress-like building is not the most welcoming proposition. It stands isolated, a cold glass tube hemmed in by the medieval-style moat. Inside, after Donald Trump's election victory, the atmosphere was not much warmer. Having flown in to promote US trade links with Britain, the governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy, knew his job had just got a lot harder. Speaking to a small group of journalists at the embassy on Friday, 8th of November, Phil Murphy, one of the party's most senior figures, said, "It is the elephant in the room. As a Democrat, it is a very sober day on Tuesday." What had been a mission to promote his state's economic ties had become an exercise in damage limitation. He claimed, "We planned this trip knowing that we were coming right in after the election and knowing it was a possibility that President Trump could win. But there are subnational relations. We're big believers in that. We believe with great passion that those relations can be strengthened. And we start in a good place here. Trump's victory has raised the prospect of a renewed global trade war on a much bigger scale than in his first term in office, when his clashes with China rippled through world trade and weighed in on growth across advanced economies. On the campaign trail, Donald Trump, who has described himself as a tariff man, threatened levies of 10% on all goods imports from U.S. trading partners and up to 60% and 100% for China and Mexico. As an open trading economy, the United Kingdom could be in the firing line. Britain's trade relations with the United States, its single largest trading partner, is worth more than £300 billion a year, at a time when links with the European Union are still boxed in by Brexit. Experts warn sales of cars, Rolls-Royce aero engines and medicines could be at risk, but claim Britain could be more immune than other countries because the bulk of its exports to the United States are in services, which are unlikely to be covered by the tariffs. Ashley Webb at the consultancy Capital Economics said that the overall effect on United Kingdom gross domestic product, GDP, from tariffs on US imports from Britain could be negligible, but warned that retaliation and a hit to the global economy would have worse consequences. However, last time the fallout was still considerable and Britain was not immune. Trump's previous trade war with China weighed heavily on global growth, hitting Britain's economy, including through higher uncertainty and reduced confidence affecting business investment. The National Institute of Economic and Social Research has said Donald Trump's measures could halve Britain's growth and drive up prices for consumers. Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, said recently that Threadneedle Street would be watching the situation closely. The US Embassy in London, a building derided by Donald Trump as off-location and lousy when he snubbed its 2018 opening ceremony, will become a flashpoint in the coming years. Phil Murphy said tariffs were the top concern in his meetings in Britain, which included visiting companies in London and Cambridge, dining with Jonathan Reynolds, the business secretary, and watching Crystal Palace play Fulham in the Premier League, pointing out that the United Kingdom was New Jersey's second largest economic partner globally with $9.6 billion in trade. He said holding on to that would be important even as the US turns inward. However, Phil Murphy questioned whether Donald Trump would carry through with his campaign trail threats after winning the White House. Murphy added, "I'm sure you're concerned about tariffs and the bilateral relationship. If I were to speculate, there is a lane for the UK and less of a lane for the European Union and NATO." He said Trump could take a favourable view of the United Kingdom because he supports Britain's withdrawal from the European Union. Murphy added, "Brexit and Trump each were born in the same year. I can't speak for the president, but I think there's an embedded sympathy for somebody who leaves a bureaucracy, a club, if you will." The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. With the Labour Party now in power in Britain, raising questions over the strength of US-UK ties, Prime Minister Keir Starmer is under pressure to build closer trade links with the European Union instead. Phil Murphy, the Democrat governor of New Jersey, who was at the US Embassy in London on Friday, 8th of November, described Brexit as an awful decision and said, "I think you can have both." Phil Murphy added, "Anything the United Kingdom can do to get into a better lane with the European Union, I think is a smart move, without giving up, obviously, its self-interest and principles. Although portraits of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris still hang in the entrance to the London embassy, what a Democrat thinks about Donald Trump's likely policy direction may be of little significance. However, as a senior politician who fought New Jersey's corner when Donald Trump was last president and also served as Barack Obama's ambassador to Germany, he has experience and is not alone in this view. Investors are also betting that Donald Trump will not follow through with his full tariff policy, a belief reflected in a relatively muted financial market reaction to the risk. Mark Dowding, chief investment officer at asset manager Blue Bay, said, "We expect early action on China. However, a more wide-ranging global tariff could be used as more of a negotiating ploy with other US trading partners." Mark Dowding said, "There will certainly be tariffs on some goods in some sectors, yet the United States is keen to keep Europe outside in terms of its position relative to China, and it will also want to avert a trade war, which could add to costs and hurt consumers." Furthermore, Donald Trump says he will pay for the tax cuts by imposing tariffs on foreign goods entering the United States and has floated the idea of a 60% to 100% levy on Chinese products and a 10 to 20% levy on goods from the rest of the world.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You are listening to Islamic Upbringing. Well, in this program, we answer your queries and questions and we discuss very important topics on Islamic upbringing of your children. Our answers are rooted in the Holy Book of Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today we have had the pleasure to be with Brother Muhammad Liaqat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you so much.
So, dear listeners, Brother Liaqat is really interested in conducting research in the fields of Islamic history, psychology, and philosophy. And currently, he's pursuing a master's degree in Islamic psychology at Jamiat al-Mustafa Institute of Islamic and Social Sciences. Well, Brother Liaqat, again, a very warm welcome.
Thank you so much, sister.
So we are glad to be with you again. And we have been discussing some very beautiful examples from the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. Especially you gave us also the examples of nurturing, how parents had nurtured their children and how they stood in Karbala for the imam of their time, and how we can nurture our children again so that they can be there for the imam of their time. So yes, brother, today we would want to know more from you.
Thank you so much. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So on the day of Ashura, the day of lessons, it's not just an incident in the history. There are there are thousands and thousands of lessons what we can learn with regards to upbringing. There are many more what we can see, like with regards to political aspect, with regards to like other like economical aspect.
Hijab.
Seeing Ashura from an economical aspect as well. Of course, this is not my topic again. And with regards to upbringing, so Ashura has a lot of dimensions. If we go to see, and one of the dimension is upbringing. So going ahead, I was talking about the teenagers on the day of Ashura and their upbringing from the elders, how they brought up their teens. So one is Hazrat Ali Akbar alayhi salatu wasalam, whom we see, and also like we also see Abdullah ibn Imam Hassan alayhi salam, who was just about 11 and a half years old on the day of Ashura. And we see that he was the last shaheed before Imam Hussein al-Islam, even the shaheed after Al-Hazrat Ali al-Asghar al-Islam, according to the history, according to what we see. So we can see like he was a teen, yeah? So we see that a teen is the one like still supporting the Imam until his last breath.
Right.
So the Imam is in the ditch and the enemy wants to kill him like any moment. And at that time, a teen is the one, not an adult. A teen is the one who is coming still forward to support and protect his imam. So
right.
Abdullah ibn Imam Hussein al-Islam, who was eventually, of course, he got martyred in front of the eyes of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Another example, Hazrat Ali Akbar alayhi salam. We see him as a beautiful example, who was Ashbahun Nas li Rasulih. So the one who was extremely, I would say, like very near to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, with regards to his face, his expressions,
appearance,
his talking methodology,
right,
his thinking even, yeah? So it's not just, oh, you know what? He used to look like Rasulullah. No, it's not just, it's also his thinking and his speaking methodology. Everything was near to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Of course, he's not an imam, but he's a teen. And we can see these qualities in Hazrat Ali al-Akbar alayhi salatu wasalam.
Right.
So, and also another example, what we see on the day of Ashura, again, with this dimension of tarbiyah, is if a person does tarbiyah properly towards his son or daughter, a teen, and there were other daughters like who are teenagers on
right.
the day of Ashura again, who sacrificed everything what they had after the day of Ashura, after the killing of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. So it's not just the son who went ahead into the battlefield. We saw the daughter of Imam Hussein alayhi salam delivering speeches, sermons
right.
On the way to Kufa and also in Kufa.
Right.
So yeah.
We'll discuss more with you, brother, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing on IRIB English Radio. Brother Liaqat is with us. So, Brother Liaqat, you were saying that on the day of Ashura, the way the teens were nurtured, it showed up in that event and it remained a lesson for the generations. You said there were not only boys who were teens who fought in the battlefield, but the women, but the teens, the teenage girls who were there present in this event, they also fought the wars with their words.
Exactly. I would say with regards to the teenagers who were girls, how they used to protect the hijab, if
right.
we see. Example, the daughters of Imam Hussein al-Islam. Of course, the adults are adults.
Right.
They have a lot of experience. Their knowledge is much more than the teens, isn't it? But even the teens who were there on the day of Ashura, they cried when their veils were snatched away. So this shows something like with regards to the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salatu was-salam, when some Islamic something which is wajib upon a person is being snatched away from the person, the person is crying aloud, crying out by saying, my right has been snatched away from me. Being a teenager again. And this was the upbringing of the parents, how they brought up their children, that this is being shown on the day of Ashura. Even we see this with a 3.5-year-old girl when her hijab was snatched away and she asked her aunt, like, oh, my dear aunt Zainab, salamu alayha, I want my veil back from the enemies. Then we see Sayyida Zainab replying to her by saying, Ammati Misluk, your aunt is also just like you. Even I don't have a veil.
Right.
So you see, like, so it's like this is shown even in a small child who is just 3.5-4 years old.
Right.
This is shown even in a teenager, and this is shown in adulthood as well. So the impact of upbringing, how we upbring our children, you see, like, again, it goes back to how we are speaking to them, how are we showing love towards them, yeah, how are we valuing their words, and what teachings are we giving to them? Everything matters over here.
Right.
And, of course, like, where are they standing? With whom are they going? With whom are they coming back? Who are their friends? You see, everything matters.
Everything has an impact.
Exactly. So parent, yeah.
The way you have brought up the issue of hijab over here, how these little girls and teenage girls and adults were concerned about their hijabs in the times of calamity, in the times of tragedy, because in this tragic situation, they could have just one excuse, like we were being looted from all the sides, so we had no way out, and like we had no other choice. But this being restless, this restlessness shows another modesty that they are veiled with. And the same is shown in the life of Lady Fatima Zahra, salamu alayha, that has personally helped me to observe more hijab. It's like when I heard the event of, like, she is being with Lady Fizza on a window and they are watching a funeral is being taken. And then it's very obvious the funeral that the men were carrying was a funeral of a woman. And then Lady Fatima Zahra, salamu alayha, says to Fizza, oh Fizza, when I die, first of all, I should be buried in the night time. And second, construct me a tabut. So construct me a tabut when I should not be, it should not be obvious, like, is there a male inside this or a female inside this? So that's the, I would say, intensity Indeed. Of hijab or being worried about. And because after death, nobody is going to ask you. And when you are in a tragic situation, in a calamity, nobody is going, you're not accountable or you're not answerable, but yet we see this is the upbringing.
Indeed.
That has
this shown. Happens when the upbringing is embedded,
right.
It's completely like dissolved in the soul.
Right.
Yep.
We'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Ya muqiy al khayrat, ya muqiy al khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, Allah will write a reward for he who kisses his child, and Allah will bring happiness on Judgment Day to he who makes his child happy.
Ya muqiy al khayrat, ya muqiy al khayrat.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat is with us, and we are discussing the impact that remains on the teenagers and the children of any age when they are brought up very carefully. Yes, brother, you were mm-hmm. giving us the examples.
So exactly. So I would say it's not a forceful impact upon a child. It's an impact which is embedded in a child or a teen. Example. Of course, it starts from childhood and it shows more color when the child turns into a teenager, and it shows more colors when the child goes into his or her adulthood. So as the process of growth the physical growth goes ahead, even the showing of colors of the teachings and the upbringing of the person or the child shows more colors.
Right.
So these are the teachings from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and also from Amirul Mu'mineen. Of course, they would have beautiful discussions among themselves, isn't it? And in fact, when Sayyida Zahra salamul alayha, when she got married to Amirul Mu'mineen, she was just a teenager. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So over here we see four dimensions from the life of Sayyida Fatima. And one of the dimensions, what we see from her life is the life of being a daughter towards her father. She
right.
is a teen. And how does a teen shows respect towards her father, isn't
right,
it?
Right.
Another dimension is a teen showing her love and affection towards her husband.
Right.
And a teen showing her love and affection towards the children. And a teen all by herself, Sayyidatin Nisa il Alameen. She became Sayyidatin Nisa il Alameen in her teenagehood, isn't
right.
it? When she was a
reaching
teenager.
This level.
Exactly. She was called, she is the Sayyidatin Nisa il Alameen min al awwaleen wal akhireen. She's the leader of all the women of the whole existence from the start till the last. So she was just a teen, meaning a teenager can reach a value, a stage where he or she is called the leader of all the women. Or over here we see Sayyida Shabab Ahl Jannah, where he is called the leader or master of the youths of paradise, Imam Hassan alayhi salam and Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam. So this is what a teen has achieved during her teenagehood,
right.
isn't it? So
teens have this capability to reach spiritual heights. So dear teens, stop giving us excuses like I'm rebellious because I'm a teen, I am rude because I'm a teen, and I'm just going through these hormonal imbalances and all. All the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, they were all brought to earth in the form of human beings, and they went through all those phases that we go through. And
indeed,
the difficult times that they have gone through, we have never seen that difficult time ever in the history. Thank you so much, Brother Liaquat, for being with us. That was
Thank
our today's
you.
Episode. Dear listeners, if you had any questions or queries, please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. If you want to listen to our episodes again, go back to our official website. There's www.parstoday.ir/en. There's a tab, Call of Islam, and you can go there and you'll find an archive of our programs there. Thank you for listening. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
How about you, IRIB English Radio? Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.